In our last episode, we were left wondering what Belle was going to do with all this anger that had built up. Well, let's find out.
But that was pretty much all I did. And then, out of anger and frustration for what this group of people were doing to our lives and our marriages and trying to hold on to insider information and not wanting anything about them posted on the internet, I decided I was really going to blow the lid off of them, I guess. I was going to stick it to them as best I could. And I wanted to report things that were going on, but I did not want to get busted. And I was trying to think of a really cool name to use to post under. I looked up evil. I looked up enemy. I looked up a bunch of different words. It probably took me like 3 days looking through thesauruses and trying to come up with just the proper word for what I wanted to do with this moniker, this screen name. And so I came up with what I thought was a really good word until this war came out. So I started posting as insurgent. And all insurgent did for the most part was post articles from the Way magazine, transcripts of the Sunday teaching service tapes, information that was being announced at the services. I didn't get into a lot of personal stuff as insurgent. Insurgent was just angry and vehemently against what the Way International stood for. And I think it's probably a pretty apropos name, even though the insurgents are the bad guys in the war now. That's what I was. I was a bad guy with IEDs thrown at the Way International, and it pissed them off. Mm-hmm. It really did. And there was a time where I would get emails constantly with my password or notifications that my logon was locked because of trying to use too many passwords, and I posted about it a few times. Because I was pissed. I knew they were trying to hack into my logon. What's funny is I don't think I ever corresponded with anybody privately as insurgent. So they wouldn't have gotten anything anyway, mm-hmm. except for my posts, which they already had. Because you use a Yahoo email address, so it's not like they still know who you are. I think I was insurgent at Yahoo.com or something. I don't know. So it was a very generic email, and I never used it because I only signed up for that. You probably don't want me talking about that, do you?
What?
Telling people how to sign up different names and setting up email addresses just so they can get a new name.
Oh, it's very common now. I don't think the Way International has gotten much smarter, gotten mm-hmm. much more clever in recent years. It's not something that's going to be news to anyone. If it was 6 years ago, it would be news, but it's pretty common these days.
So I was cutting edge on something?
You were very cutting edge, actually.
Yeah. Oh, I felt so sneaky. So I posted as insurgent, and after, we went to our region took the god-awful bus trip to Ohio for a Sunday teaching service, and it was the worst trip of my life. The bathroom and the bus busted, and it smelled up the whole bus. The bus was uncomfortable. It was just miserable, miserable time. Long, long drive up to Ohio from Florida. Oh, my gosh, it was a long drive. So when I got back, I posted about the trip on the web, and the next time we went to fellowship, we were called aside by our fellowship coordinator, and we were told that there was this person posting on the internet a lot of things about the Way International, and they were mean and awful things that this person was posting. And had either of us heard of the name insurgent? And of course, my husband's like, no. And I'm watching him because I'm thinking I need to have the same reaction he does. I'm like, no. And then, you know, you're not supposed to ask too many questions because that will raise suspicion. So I just let him do all the talking. But see, being married to a police officer, you learn that they pick up on subtle body language and voice changes and everything you ask, anything you say can be scrutinized and evaluated. So I was so paranoid about getting busted. If not by the fellowship coordinator, then by my own husband. So I was sweating bullets there for a while. But then I found out that they had questioned every single person in Florida and I think in the whole region, which would at that time be Alabama and Georgia as well, that they had questioned every single person that was in the Way if they were insurgent, and if not, did they know who was insurgent, and had they been in touch with anybody that had recently left the Way, and if not, did they know anybody that was still in touch with people that had left the Way. Everybody. Every single person was questioned.
I wonder.
That's how bad they wanted to stop insurgent.
I wonder how many people that was that they ended up questioning. That had to be an enormous number because that was a fairly large area.
Yeah, Orlando alone was huge. Because it still was pretty big at that time. I think we probably had 300 people in our branch at that time. And Orlando was huge. Miami was huge. Tampa was huge. Of course, this was, what, 2001, 2002?
Mm-hmm.
So people had started dropping like flies around that time because of the lawsuits. But I wonder how many people it drove to the internet after they got questioned. I wonder how many people wanted to go on and see what this insurgent person was doing.
There were definitely rises in the number of hits that Greasepot was getting. I could see that it was causing a fury. At the Way International, my understanding, I've never had it officially verified, but supposedly they had a whole department or a group of people that all they did all day long was copy posts that were done on Greasepot.
Oh my God.
I know a number of people that have been in communication with the Way International, and they've had posts that they've done thrown in their face.
Wow.
So not only do they copy them, they organize them.
Wow. And, so they have them.
And of course, they did it on my bandwidth. So, you know, I could tell which IP addresses were the Way International just by the amount of bandwidth they were using on a daily basis. So it was rather amusing. To, you know, I'm sure they thought they were being, you know, secretive
covert.
And all that, or covert, yeah. Meanwhile, I'm like going, okay, well, they're doing it from this address. Here's the hours that they're on. Here's how much bandwidth they're using on a daily basis.
Wow.
So you
there, and I wonder how many of those people left.
I don't know. You know, unfortunately, well, one of the things Waydale did this, and one of the things that happens at Greasepot is that there's all these subgroups going on. Like you had a group of people that you communicated with. When you were insurgent, I don't think I don't think you and I corresponded at all. I don't think we ever even had a private message going back and forth. And
I don't think so.
And one of the nice things about that is that it was very grassroots. Things could go on, and I didn't have to know them. And it was almost better that I be ignorant of them in case anything happened.
Right.
All I was doing was providing a place where people could meet. You know, it's almost like this is the big park. You guys can sit wherever you want and talk about whatever you want and leave, and no one knows who you are or what you're about.
Right.
Yeah. So you definitely shook a lot of things up. I believe that you and a few others were the cause of the dissemination of misinformation by International.
Where
they wanted to track down who was who, and the way they would do it was to give different information in different areas and start narrowing it down. But I believe you had a solution to that. Didn't you collect information?
Oh, yeah. When something would be announced that I thought was noteworthy, I would check with several different people, most of them on the boards, to find out if they had heard the same announcement. And we would corroborate our stories and compare notes behind the scenes in private messages before we would post anything on the web. Or we would have an anonymous person post it. Like, we would send stuff. I would send things. Washington Weather would post things. Hope would post things for us. I'm trying to think. Somebody posted something one time for us that was not somebody I normally would correspond with, but because of their personality on the board, I thought it would be a great announcement for them to post. Huh. And it was probably one of my only correspondences with that person. But they posted it, and I was tickled to pieces to see that they trusted me enough to post that. But we had to check our stories. I think what clued them in toward me as Insurgent was when I posted about the bus trip. Mm-hmm. Then they knew which region I was in, and that was stupid. But I was anxious to get the information out there. Mm-hmm. See, that is something I would have passed on normally to Hope or John or somebody else to post for me, and I decided to post it myself. And I think that was probably the first mistake I made as Insurgent. Mm-hmm. But by that time, I had been living a double life for years. I mean, I had been wanting out and on my own, trying to figure life out for a couple of years already. And then once I found Waydale and then Greasepot, I had help, but I still wanted out. And so I would go to work and I would be on the internet. I would be reading stuff. I would be in the chat rooms. I would be using blueletterbible.org. I did more word studies after I found you guys on the internet than I ever did while I was in the way. I studied the Bible more then than I did when I was actually in the way.
Now, at this time, what was happening in your marriage? How was he reacting to the fact that, I mean, obviously, you know, he was there during the questionings and things like that. Did he suspect anything?
I don't think he did. I don't think he suspected anything. He knew that I was unhappy, and he knew that I was tired of the things and how things were being run in the way ministry, but I don't think he ever suspected that I would be continuing to go on the internet, much less that I would be posting or doing anything like that. Mm-hmm. I think he just didn't think I was capable of it. Or he didn't want to know. Because, you know, like a parent whose kid's doing drugs, a lot of times all the signs are there, but you ignore them because you don't really want to know.
Right.
I mean, he's a police officer, for Christ's sake. He could he could look at somebody for 3 seconds and tell you every detail about them that you could imagine. And I couldn't even tell you what color hair they had. But to have all this going on under his nose, I think he didn't want to know.
Uh-huh.
I really think he didn't want to know. Because I would start some fights about, you know, the debt issue or something else that they were teaching. And he knew that I wasn't smart enough to come up with that on my own. So I think after a while he started thinking that I was doing that, but he would never let on that he even suspected mm-hmm. that I was doing that. He never let on to me. I found out later after our divorce that he had gone on the internet and been reading stuff. And I think he was reading to see if he could figure out if it was me or not. Mm. So I never had a clue that he even suspected. But I think for the longest time that he didn't suspect. And then I think that maybe when it got to be too much for him, that he chose not to notice. Because
mm-hmm.
I find it very, very hard to believe that he didn't notice. He notices everything. I find it very hard to believe that he didn't notice.
Right.
I think he just didn't want to have to deal with that.
Right. Okay, so now you've revealed the bus trip, and what happens after that?
When we were at headquarters, I saw a girl that used to live in our area, and I really cared for this woman. She's just a genuine sweet soul, and she had expressed an interest in going to nursing school in North Carolina.
Mm-hmm.
She was working on staff, and she had been on staff for a year, and she wanted to leave when her year was up, but they told her that she had signed on for 2 years. Now, she and everybody else knows that she only signed up for 1 year, but they told her that if she left, she would be breaking her word and that they needed her to stay for the second year. And they ended up convincing her to stay for another year, even though she hated being at headquarters once she got up there. And I wanted her to go to school, and going to nursing school at that time, you could write your own paycheck mm-hmm. once you graduated.
Yes.
Even now nurses can pretty much go wherever they want to go. And so I told her, I said, you get out there and find you a scholarship or a grant or something to help pay for it, and then you get a loan for the rest of it, because you're going to be able to pay that loan back very quickly after you graduate. And it's a great investment in your future, and I think it would be a wonderful thing for you to do, and she would be an awesome nurse. So when we got back, I did the bus thing, and then I can't remember when exactly, but Chris Jordan's paper on debt had come out, and that is an awesome piece of work.
Mm-hmm.
It takes all of the ways, keys to biblical research. She follows all of those keys and comes up with the definition of debt that's proper, that you can't argue with. It's right there in black and white, following all of the rules, and it's just clear as day that debt is not wrong as far as owing someone money. So I printed out Chris Jordan's paper, and I printed out one of the better threads that we had on debt and put those together, put them in an envelope. And I knew that I couldn't put my name on it, because if I put my name on it and she ended up telling on me, then I would get in trouble. And I couldn't put my name on it because, I didn't know if I could trust her that far.
Mm-hmm.
But I wanted her to get the information, and I wanted her to read it. So I didn't write a letter or anything to go with it that might indicate who it was from. I knew it would come from Orlando. I knew the postmark would be Orlando, but I didn't think that they would have that would just bring them to Orlando. They wouldn't know anything else. And I was so anxious to get it in the mail that instead of waiting the day to go to the post office, I used the Pitney Bowes machine at work to mail the letter. And that night, in the middle of the night, I think I sat up in bed and screamed. I was like, what did I do? And the next day, I'm like on PMs, and I'm like PMing Oakspear and Abigail, and I'm like, I screwed up. I'm busted. And we thought that Pitney Bowes was, it was illegal for them to give out that information. And we found out later that it had been illegal at one time for them to do that, but that's not the case anymore. And so I had this, I don't think I even told you this part. I had this underground campaign going, and I got a list from somebody that had just recently come off staff, and I don't know if they want anybody to know, so I'm not going to tell you who it is.
Okay.
But they gave me a list of employees at headquarters. And I sent this list out to a whole bunch of different people behind the scenes,
mm-hmm.
and they all mailed Chris Jordan's paper to headquarters to somebody that was on staff anonymously. So this same package got sent to headquarters from all over the United States, and I sent another package to somebody else from Orlando. And so all these people at headquarters got Chris Jordan's paper on debt. And so we figured that if they got bombarded, then they wouldn't be able to follow up.
Right.
So all these awesome grease spotters are helping me behind the scenes.
That's great. No, I didn't. This is the first time I've heard that one.
Oh, that was awesome. And I was so thankful because I didn't know the person from headquarters, from Adam. And I don't think they had been posting very long. And so it was asking a lot for them to give out names of people on staff.
Mm-hmm.
That was a really very brave step for that person.
Right.
And I was honored since they were new and didn't know me from Adam. And here they are giving me this information.
Mm-hmm.
It just, I was in a panic mode. But I think like the robber that wants to get caught, I think secretly I was really at wit's end. I was really reaching rock bottom emotionally, physically, everything. It was all taking its toll on me.
Right.
We're talking 5 years now I've been living a double life. Pretending to be a good little wafer and pretending to be still in love with the ministry and trying desperately to save my marriage. And I had pretty much lost all respect for my husband by that time.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he wouldn't stand up for us. He wouldn't stand up for things that he knew were wrong. He wouldn't defend us, and he certainly wouldn't defend me. It was like I had a babysitter in the house because everything that I said had to be filtered through him to go to leadership. And I think part of that was he didn't want to be accused of not being the head of his household. But he also was trying to figure out how to rein in his wife. I was just at wit's end. I had really hit rock bottom. Yeah, I'm not easy to tame. I know I'm a handful. And that's probably an understatement.
So now you've I'm still thinking about the letters coming from all over the country. I think that's just great. They must have had to photocopy every single envelope that came into that place. That was brilliant. That was absolutely brilliant. So looking back on the whole experience, how do you feel you know, about life. Obviously, you know, from actually, let me backtrack on that. When you first got involved, you had mentioned, you know, that you were going down to whatever that place was with the palm readings and
Casadega.
Yeah, thank you.
That's not a name just anybody would know.
Yeah, I know. And you know, obviously the, you know, you met people with the Way International, and your direction in life changed. Had you, before you got involved, was there any, did you have a plan, any place that you wanted to go?
Well, when I got introduced first to PFAL, I had been searching at that time. But, you know, I mean, I had been looking everywhere except the Bible, because I had already been there, done that. So I was looking at past lives. I was reading Shirley MacLaine's books. I tried to read Ram Dass. I looked at numerology, tarot cards, you name it. I was looking at it, you know, and I was still investigating things. I was still checking stuff out. But I think in the back of my mind, I always knew I'd come back to church. You know, my white picket fence and my 2.2 children and my dog, and we would go to church on Sunday morning, and my kids would go to Sunday school, and we would be your normal average American family, much like what I grew up in.
Mm-hmm.
I expected life to be like that. I think I just looked at it really more as an act of rebellion, I think. Not shocking.
There seems to be a pattern here.
I think that I looked into all of that stuff. One, because it had been, you know, forbidden. It was the unknown, and it was devilish. And part of me wanted to know what was so devilish about it. What were all these deep, dark secrets about these different beliefs and things of spirituality? What were all these people into anyway? More so than looking for answers to life, I think. I really seriously doubt that that's what I was expecting to get. Because I always pictured myself in church, and I always pictured myself growing up and having a family a lot like the family that I grew up in, which was church and your standard regular Protestant religion. And that's where kids learned values and morals and the proper way to behave like young ladies and gentlemen. So that's what I always pictured. But I don't think that the Way Ministry really, I don't think it was an answer to prayer. I don't think it was filling a need that was there, you know, some deep-seated need or desire. I don't think that had anything to do with it, as opposed to, you know, different people that got witnessed to by the WOWs, or, you know, were on their last leg and begging God to give them answers. That I wasn't in dire circumstances like that, and I wasn't unsure of my beliefs like that. So I didn't feel a need, and because of when I got involved, there was the last Rock of Ages, and everything was starting to change just as I got involved. That's, I guess, when Craig Martindale had come out of his funk and was starting to build what he pictured for the organization. So there was no warm and fuzzy times. I didn't go out and get drunk with anybody from the ministry. I didn't already hang out with people in the organization. I didn't see them as friends. We weren't already friends. And I didn't really see them as friends at the time. You know, like when the old timers, and they probably, there's probably got to be a better word for that. When the people that were around in the 60s and the 70s and the 80s and they had all the great experiences, that it was just the part of the Jesus movement, the hippie and the free love and the great camaraderie and family-like atmosphere that everyone experienced. I really enjoy reading about those, and I really see how that makes things even that much more conflicted. Mm-hmm. But I never experienced any of that. Mm-hmm. I have no memories like that to reflect back on. It was always structured. It was always controlled. It was always, you know, regimented the whole time. And it just got more and more regimented, more and more controlled, and more structured the longer I was involved. So I don't really have any good times to look back on. I don't have anything that I can say, yeah, you know, there was some good that came out of my involvement with the little ministry, because there's not. I got involved and my life was controlled. I moved in with somebody when I didn't want to, and I married the totally wrong person for me. He didn't love me. He loved the idea of who I could be as far as his ideal ministry wife, I think. I think he thought that I was moldable into what he wanted. And I was also one of the only single women his age in our area, and we all know that you have to marry another believer. And so basically, I gave him all of my young, fertile years, and now I'm pushing 40, and I don't know if I'll find Mr. Wright, if I'll be able to have the family that I always dreamed about that I didn't get to have with the way. And so I have a lot of regrets. I have a lot of anger, not necessarily at the group, but at myself for making stupid decisions and for not being more rebellious than I was. Because I think if I had been, I'd have either been kicked out or left a lot sooner. And so now my life has a different perspective. I have to temper my fantasies of the white picket fence and the 2.5 children and, you know, the husband waiting at home or, you know, going to soccer games and stuff like that. I don't get to have those fantasies much anymore because they're not as possible. They don't seem as realistic and as possible as they did mm-hmm. when I was growing up and in my 20s. So I mourn that. I can honestly say I didn't get anything good out of my involvement.
Mm-hmm. So how do you feel about life now with that behind you?
Well, it's a fresh slate. I have a lot of unlearning to do.
Mm-hmm.
I've definitely developed a dose of skepticism about a lot of things and a lot less trust for a lot of things and a lot of people. A lot of issues that come up as a result of that. But I also have freedom. I can breathe. I can move. I can leave the dishes in the sink overnight. I can put spoons and forks in the same area in the dishwasher now. I have a house, and I am more secure about my financial future. I am optimistic about, you know, where I go from here. And it's definitely a healthier lifestyle. I don't have the two different lives going on. I'm not trying to impress anybody. I'm not trying to live up to anyone else's standards but my own now. And I'm a little bit more knowledgeable about what I'm capable of and what I'm not, and where to put those standards. You know, I can be realistic in my expectations.
Mm-hmm.
Like my signature used to say, a bad day outside the walls of the Way International is better than a good day inside ever was.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I have bad days. I have good days and I have bad days. But by far, it's 110% better than it was when I was involved. I've reestablished my ties with my family,
mm-hmm.
and I have a greater and a deeper appreciation for them, and a tremendous amount of respect for what they went through, what I put them through, and how much I owed them. And they never gave up on me. You know, when my mom was here for 2 weeks in February, and I think part of it was mom. You know, you want to see with your own two eyes that your kid's doing okay.
Mm-hmm.
She did a lot of cleaning in my house. And she told me that after I got engaged and had obviously been under the power of the way the group operated, that I wasn't the same person. And they had contacted Steve Hassan, and they were ready to shell out ungodly amounts of money to have me kidnapped and deprogrammed, or to at least have me sit down with him and to try and get me out. But my dad was afraid. My dad was afraid that if it didn't work, that they would lose me forever.
Mm-hmm. But they didn't.
And you've met my dad.
Oh,
he's
yeah.
not very emotional. I mean, he's very logical about life.
Mm-hmm.
So to think that I put them through that is heart-wrenching. No, that just broke my heart when my mom told me that. And, you know, that cost, I think it was going to cost them $10,000, if not more. I think it was $10,000 plus charges, and depending on how long it took and everything. But what's really sad is I think it probably would have worked.
Yeah.
Because, you know, even then I knew that I didn't like the way things were going, that it wasn't something I could put my finger on. And the snowball effect, it was going so fast that I didn't have time to stop and think, and I didn't have anything there to stop the momentum. But I think it might would have worked. But you can't, you know, you can't dwell on that either.
Right.
Just the fact that I was so far gone that they even thought that they would have to do that.
Mm-hmm.
It's pretty scary.
Of course, at Grease Spot, we do it for free, you know, so.
And you can even get a T-shirt.
And you can get a T-shirt after you're all done.
So you can literally say, been there, done that, got the
T-shirt. Yeah, and I got the T-shirt, yeah.